Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Right. Marquee Network's lead anchor.
I feel like the whole White Sox team went to the Gold Chain Gang back in the day at the Fox Valley Mall, and they said, hey, cut us X amount of length of rope when it comes to the gold chains, and let's make it happen. Chains for everybody.
Cole Wright respects everyone.
Maybe all these guys throwing 100 and getting hurt is going to be a cautionary tale down the road, almost like plastic surgery. If you get too much plastic surgery, you'll be walking around looking like Mickey Rourke. No disrespect to Mickey Rourke. Once again, no disrespect, but I have a hard time finding Adam Gase as an offensive genius.
Cole Wright, smooth and debonair.
Sometimes sweatpants, shorts, my wife says I look like I'm wearing pajamas everywhere I go. But, you know, you got to be comfortable.
Cole Wright with Lawrence Holmes on The Score.
Oh, no disrespect.
None taken. Where do we think Cole was celebrating that incredible win by the Cubs last night? I mean, obviously he was in the Marquee Studios, but he's also on the diamond. I saw some of that stuff come out via social media. This is what I said. There's no reason. You have Cole right there. You have Elise Miniker there. You might as well get him out on the field and have him do some work. And apparently that's what they are doing. He joins me now on the Score Hotline, which is presented by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Mr. Wright.
What's going on, Lawrence? How you feeling, man?
I'm good. So what was it like to do some of that on-the-field stuff with the whole crew?
Pretty unbelievable. I mean, anytime you're one of only like five or six people out on the diamond at Wrigley Field, I mean, an absolute cathedral of baseball. I mean, what more could you ask for? You know, to be able to be out there, you know, I was, you know, shagging balls that Carlos was hitting. Elise was giving him flips, and he was hitting liners all over the yard. And, you know, I was able to have my little one out in center field, and she was out there scooping him up like it was her job, man. And, you know, so to be able to go out there and not just the moment in and of itself, but to be able to share that moment with my daughter, I mean, that was pretty cool, especially with the way that she digs softball.
Yeah, man, like that's a dope, like that's a memory that she'll have forever, and that you'll have forever. As someone who grew up loving this Cubs team, I can imagine a little bit because I've had the chance to throw out the first pitch at White Sox. So, but to be able to like, you know, have my mitt and take some grounders or something, that would be even better.
You didn't bring your mitt to throw out the first pitch?
What were you thinking? No, I didn't. I didn't bring it. But luckily, there was a fan who like recognized me and said, "Hey," and he had a mitt from the 30s. So he let me wear it to throw out the first pitch. It was pretty dope.
Did you throw a strike or did you bounce it?
I'll send you the video. I threw a cutter to Chris Sale.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So
back foot cutter?
To a left-handed hitter, yeah. So the story is I said to Sale, I said, listen, can I like throw it? And he said, sure, I'll catch it because, you know, I'm a major leaguer. But you better not skip it because I'm not wearing a cup. I said, not a problem. And then when I threw it, he was like, oh, bleep. Like, you could actually throw. I was like, yes. Some of us actually did play baseball before we started talking about it. And you'll see. I'll send you the video. He was shocked by it. Like, shocked.
Okay. All right.
So,
nice.
But
I'm still waiting for my day in the sun. I'm still waiting for that one.
You still waiting for that call-up? But see, you still throw leaded gas. Like, I'm happy to be breaking the 70s at this point in my life, and you're still throwing in the 90s.
I don't know if I'm throwing in the 90s. Maybe is there one 90 left in my arm with a lot of adrenaline and the juice of a crowd, perhaps. But I mean, I also run the risk of throwing my arm attached to the baseball still across home plate. Who knows, man? Like, I'm willing to take that risk.
Well,
you know, if I ever do get that call to throw out the first pitch, I'm going to say, you know, this is as good as it gets right here for my throwing career. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to snap my forearm right in half if I have to.
Okay, I was going to ask you, would it be worth TJ surgery for you to hit 90 miles per hour on the gun throwing out the first pitch?
Absolutely. I don't know if I'd even get the surgery. I'd just probably let it heal on its own. You know, I call my guy Mr. Miyagi through. He, you know, he'd do the little rub the hands together, put a little grasp on like the all Valley Karate Tournament. You never know, man.
Oh, that's so great, man. I love it. I'm waiting for Cobra Kai to come back, man. I love that show.
I liked it, but you know what? It got a little bit cheesy. And you know what? Daniel LaRusso's whack.
He is.
Like, he's just a whack character, man. Like, and as a character that you liked in the original series of movies, like for him to just to be such a dork, like, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, Johnny's way cooler. He was probably way cooler in the original movie too, but they just wrapped the whole story and plot line around Daniel LaRusso.
Well,
Johnny's way cooler.
Look, when you have some time today, Gary Goldman, the comedian, he's a friend of the show now, he has an incredible set all about how Daniel is the villain of the first Karate Kid movie. And every point he makes is dead on. And it's like they leaned into that for Cobra Kai. That they leaned mm-hmm. into the, well, what if we looked at this from Johnny's perspective? And that's what I think has made the show so interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a good one, man. But like I said, it got a little bit, it jumped the shark. And you know what, the crazy thing about the phrase and the term jumping the shark, that wasn't even the last season of Happy Days. Fonzie still had more to go when it came to jumping the shark. There was more past that. It shouldn't even be called jumping the shark. It should be called Richie Cunningham with a mustache. Because when Richie Cunningham came back with a mustache, that's when you knew that Happy Days was long gone. But this dude's already directing movies. Why is he back on Happy Days?
See, this is why I say that having Cole Wright on is like the old black guy in the back of the barbershop, because he makes references like
Dr.
that.
Dr. J is better than Michael Jordan.
Please don't do this.
No, I don't really believe that. But that's what our age group, that's what the old dude in the barbershop would say. Just like how we don't think anyone's better than Mike. We're the old dudes in the barbershop now. But the old dudes back when we were in the barbershop getting fades, they were saying that Dr. J was better than Mike. So.
Well, I'll give you, like, I did make this mention earlier this week. I am for anyone who wants to put Kareem in the GOAT conversation.
Okay.
Because I feel like when you're the leading scorer in the league and the league didn't have three-pointers and nobody's going to catch you as far as scoring goes, you might be the dude.
Yeah, how long did I mean, I think Kareem is fantastic, a class for all seasons. No
Are
doubt
you seriously
about, I mean,
about on, to knock down Kareem's GOAT credentials?
Not one bit at all. I mean, he was the best basketball player at the high school level, at the collegiate level. I mean, the only team that beat that UCLA national championship team was the UCLA freshman team, because freshmen were not allowed to play, and Lou Alcindor was on that squad, and that's how good he was. Dunks weren't even were an outlawed shot, and he was still out there giving cats work. However, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played like 38 years in the league, man. So, of course, no one's going to catch him when it comes to scoring. Like, I saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at the 88 All-Star game.
I mean, he was still an All-Star.
He was, but was it a lifetime achievement All-Star selection, or was it? I don't know. I mean, maybe if I had the resources right now at my fingertips to see what his stat line looked like from 88. But something tells me there was one dude that was left off that All-Star roster that was like, man, if Kareem hadn't been playing for 47 years, maybe he wouldn't be on this All-Star team.
Wow, the Kareem slander on this show is unbelievable.
And you know what? Kareem, fantastic.
No disrespect,
however,
right?
When you have to sit there and campaign for your own statue, like, I don't know. I feel like he should have already had one, but I feel like it almost went without saying. Let someone else do it.
That's why we love Cole Wright. You can watch Cole Wright on the Marquee Network for Cubs games. That game last night was, I feel like Cubs fans needed that. Like, we all know that things are going to be a little bit different around here, but for one night, it was fun to see them not quit and come back and make things hurt for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I just love seeing a team that doesn't quit, no matter what squad that it is. You know, I always like to subscribe to a philosophy that, you know, it's not over until it's over. But in baseball, you know, that rings more true than any other sport. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you're down by five goals and in the third period you have a minute left to play, I mean, that would be a legit miracle for someone to rattle off five goals just like that. NBA, you're down by 25 points with 30 seconds to go. That's a wrap. You might as well start, you know, walking towards the locker room like Isaiah and the Pistons back in the day. And if it's football, you're down by four touchdowns, it's a wrap. But in baseball, you can be down. As we saw, the Cubs 6-1, a six-run ninth inning to get that W 7-6, And it's just a testament to how remarkable baseball is. There's just no clock. It's the only sport where the defense has the ball, and it moves at its own pace. And if you can hang in there and be patient enough and do what needs to be done to go out there and get that win, I mean, you can find yourself successful at game's end, and that's exactly what we saw from this Cubs team. You know, a whole bunch of never-say-die cats that went up there with a good approach. You know, you saw, you know, a few free passes, you know, three walks in the inning. We saw Alex Reyes, who was 24 for 24 in save opportunities. The man was flawless in his time in Major League Baseball, and the Cubs, they were the first team to stick it to him. It's only fitting to have a St. Louis Cardinal on such an unbelievable run, the best in the history of baseball, and then to have the Cubs, you know, pretty much put that broomstick in the bike spokes right there. So, I mean, that was as good as it gets, man. It was an unbelievable W. Carlos Pena and myself, I mean, we were there getting the hype, and I took my jacket off when the comeback started, and I said, Los, I said, if they get this win, we're doing this post-game show, no jackets. That's just how it's going down, and that's exactly what we did, man.
I understand that you're marquee, like you're the home of the Cubs, but was there any part of you when Bryant went out of the game that thought that he had been traded before you were given the information that it was his hamstring that was bothering him?
Not really, because I mean, sometimes you see those indicators, and we didn't see that. I mean, you know, we have a feed where we see what goes on during commercial break.
So
you didn't see
the hug watch?
No, I didn't see that, and you know, wasn't really looking for that. Only because, I mean, Chris Bryant made one heck of a catch, man. And you know, sometimes you can tweak something like that, whether it be an oblique on the outstretch, or and you know, like they said, right hamstring fatigue. And that can happen. I mean, he didn't get that All-Star break. He was out there, in Colorado, busting it, you know, trying to make plays. So, you know, when you don't have that time off, I mean, baseball's a long game, man. You're playing those games, you know, out of 162. You're in the middle of the summer. You're down there in St. Louis, hotter than those toasted raviolis. So, he just needed a break. And like I was saying with Carlos, you know, he was in the training room, and he had those big shoes on with the hydrotherapy and all the water that runs through him, the cooling sensations. You know, he was trying to rip those things off and get back in that dugout and cheer on his team, man, because that was a comeback for the ages. The Cubs, they hadn't been down by five or more runs after the eighth inning and come back and got a win since late April of 1979, Lawrence. I mean, come on. I wasn't even 1 year old yet. That's unbelievable.
Kareem was playing, though.
He was. Mm-hmm. He was. Almost to the end of his career. And then he kept on playing and kept on playing and kept on playing. Uh-huh.
Yep. Oh, in my mind, you're saying that, and like Kareem is standing right behind you, like that's how I would love to see it play out. Like, and you'd be like, "Oh, Mr. Abdul-Jabbar, how you doing? I'm Cole Wright from the Marquee Network. You the GOAT."
It's almost like that episode of Portlandia when Penny Marshall came through and LaMarcus Aldridge was her boyfriend.
Well, I mean,
the way he was standing over the top of her. That's how I feel like Kareem would be looming over the top of me. Like, oh, whoa, hold on a second, Kareem. My bad, man. I'm just trying to make things interesting on the radio today.
Do you remember when Penny Marshall was Rick Fox's mom on the game?
I don't remember that one.
She was great.
Penny Marshall was Rick Fox's mom?
Yeah.
I do remember when Jamie Foxx was telling Rick Fox, "You two, come on, Rick. Come on, you and the Locks. Come on, Rick."
I mean, it was pretty funny that she walked on. I was like, that's Penny Marshall. Like, oh, snap. Penny Marshall is out here playing Rick Fox, his mom. That's pretty cool.
Pretty Ricky is what they called him.
Pretty Ricky,
Ricky
is.
Ricky Fontaine.
Is
you
what
remember
they
that
call him.
Of Martin, though?
Dude, my whole life is based on Martin. Like, honestly, like, it makes me laugh so much because even now, like, the show is funny because Martin Lawrence is hilarious, but the radio aspect of it, I laugh so hard at some of the stuff. Like when Stan is asking him to be a rump shaker with a thong on, I'm like, yeah, you know what? Sometimes program directors ask you to do stuff and you're like, I don't know if I should do that. Like all of it is just great. I was watching three or four episodes on Saturday just laughing.
Why not?
Because it's
how about the episode when Stan came in and told Martin, what are you doing making all these phone calls? Like, Stan, this is an incoming call. and then he sold the radio station. And they became Weeha.
Dude, that is one of the best episodes with Martin with the 10-gallon hat and the belt buckle and him leaning mm-hmm. into being a country music DJ in Detroit. Just and then when he goes off at the end, oh, I love that. I just absolutely love it.
And one of the even better parts of it is that people who are, maybe aren't familiar with the show is the fact that Uncle Rico is his sound engineer.
Correct.
Always wearing the Michigan hat. Sean. Fantastic.
That is, I believe that John Grise is the actor who plays Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite. He was Martin's producer. And it makes me laugh. I'm thinking about that, too. But see, this is why I like you, Cole, because you're the old black dude in the barbershop. That's why.
But the best episode, however, is at least the best 5 minutes of Martin, is Dragonfly Jones at the ATM. Kenji wants his money. And he says, you know, if you would have been studying your art, you'd know your way around in the dark. And then he runs around and he elbows the parking meter and then gets destroyed by Kenji, as always. And he goes and hits the ATM and dials 911 as he's grabbing his skull. Unbelievable, man.
There's so many classic, like, all right, so here's what we're going to do. Next week when we get together, we're going to draft our favorite moments. Me and you are going to draft our favorite moments from Martin.
I'm 100% on board for that.
All right.
We do top 10 Martin moments?
Let's do five apiece. Then if you take something, I can't take it. So we'll really have to test our knowledge.
I always, like last night when the Cubs came back and got that win, I use this phrase all the time. I was more excited than Martin winning the lottery at Nipsey's.
Do you know that there is a place called Nipsey's off of Stony Island?
What?
Yeah, there's a place.
Where are we going? That's the question.
I don't know if it's back open yet, but it's literally based off the TV show. I want to say it's like maybe like 92nd and Stony. We might have to fall through, man.
We're going. I'm gonna wear one of my cross-colored collared shirts. We could set it off, man, just like Martin.
See, I like that, Cole.
Maybe I should dress like Tommy.
He ain't got no job, man.
Maybe I should dress like Cole Brown because I do have a gang of hats.
You do. So do that. You can do that. You could be Pretty Ricky too. Go ahead, be Pretty Ricky. Pretty Ricky, what they call him?
Ricky Fontaine's what they call him. And you know what's crazy though? I actually saw Carl Anthony Towns in South Beach one time when I was a younger man.
Wait, Carl Anthony Payne, not Carl Anthony Towns.
That's a basketball player, isn't it?
It is.
It is. My bad. I'm always locked in on the sport, man. You know how we do. But I saw Carl Anthony Payne in South Beach, and I walked past him, and I was like, oh, snap, like, my name's Cole, too. And he looked at me like I was nuts, as if to say, my name isn't Cole, you idiot. And he just kind of gave me a head nod that he really didn't want to give me and just kept it moving.
That's why I love you, man. A 219 text says, I drive past Nipsey's all the time. Yeah, it's a real place. I don't know if it's open because, you know, the pandemic makes things weird. Like, there's a lot of businesses that didn't make it. And you're like, I remember it going up, but I don't know if it's actually open. Herbie, are you looking it up now? Okay, you're like, nah, because Herbie ain't never going all the way down there to have a
car
good time.
There. Car breaks down after we get past 35th.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right. I see how y'all gonna do me.
Dude, the fool.
Bunch of jerks.
My car breaks down automatically on cue.
The light goes off if he goes to 39th.
Check engine. It's like a governor. It's like when you leave a golf course with a golf cart. Like the governor just shuts it down. Or leaving a grocery basket out of the Walgreens parking lot, that wheel just locks up on him.
It does. They usually lock up in the store too. Cole,
made it sound like I tried to steal golf carts and grocery carts.
We know that you did. We know that you did. Thank you as always, sir. I will talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Is Cole Wright. I tweeted out the picture, the video though, of me throwing out the first pitch. If you want to go to my Twitter at Lawrence W. Holmes, and I tag Cole in it. I mean, I have one gift left. Athletically, I can still throw. But that's it. And I mean, that's going away too, because everything's falling apart. I'm better today, though, Herbie. Better today. I got the text from the manager being like, so when are you going to be back? I'm thinking not the next game, but the game after I'm back. Hopefully. We'll see if I can actually run soon. But not for a few more days. This thing needs to calm down a little bit more. But I got up and did the yoga. That's good. Yeah, some of y'all are getting some of my favorites in here. I mean, the Miss Trinidad. Gina's ready to fight. Fam, let's go. When we come back, for those of you who did not get an opportunity to enjoy the Cubs comeback, we're going to let you do that. We had a whole White Sox dance party. So why not have a little bit of fun when the Cubs do something right? We will do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Last night was pretty crazy. You heard Cole Wright talking about the historic nature of this. You have to go back to May of 1979 to see a comeback like the one the Cubs had. Six-run ninth to rally to win 7-6. And I don't know if you've already jumped ship from watching or listening to Cubs games, but there was a lot going on last night. You had the White Sox have a comeback victory. You had the NBA Finals going on. There are all sorts of other things that take your attention away. I'm watching the morning show per Layla's recommendation. I'm watching that on Apple Plus because I finished Ted Lasso and I was like, well, I might as well ride out this free time that I have. It's out there, but there is a lot of truth into some of that stuff. Anyway, so there's a lot of things that could distract us from a team that we know is getting ready to make some changes. So I wanted to take a couple of minutes for those of you that didn't get a chance to hear Pat and Ron and Zach break all this down. It was fun and historic last night, so let's enjoy it.
Ninth inning. Let's see if the Cubs can make a little noise. Down by 5. It is, after all, a Cubs-Cardinals game. Be on deck as this ninth inning gets underway. Patrick Wisdom to lead things off. Swing and a miss. The ball gets away from Molina, and Wisdom is going to reach. Let's see if that leads to a rally. Pointer, nothing for 2. 1-2. Big bouncer to short. One hop. Gloved by DeJong, and he throws the ball away at first. Everybody's going to be safe. Wisdom goes to third. All right, here's Mariznick. Can Jake get on? Jake's going to be taking all the way on 3-0. And it's ball 4. Hard to believe. A 4-pitch walk in this situation. And here comes Mike Schilt. He is on the top step, and he's going to make a change. Alex Reyes, the Cardinal closer. He has been perfect regarding saves for the year, 22 out of 22. All right, let's see if Sergio Alcantara can get on base. He is ready for the payoff pitch. Here it comes. Alcantara checks. No swing. That's ball 4. The ball down low in the dirt. Sure enough, Reyes walks the first man he faces. Here is Contreras batting. Bases loaded, nobody out. 6-2 St. Louis. Swing and a miss, strike 3. One down, here comes Anthony Rizzo. It's 3-2 on Rizzo, the pitch by Reyes. Ball 4 forces in a run. And now it's a 6-3 ball game. Rizzo is the tying run at first. And the batter is Baez. The 3-1. Baez hits a ground ball toward the middle. Base hit center field. 2 runs are going to score. And it's a 6-5 ball game. Rizzo stopping at second. Baez, a sharp ground ball into center field, driving in 2. Ian Happ, the batter. Happ swings and it's a ground ball. Fair ball! Fair ball into the right field corner. This is going to drive in 2. Happ is going to have a triple. Nope, he's going to stop at second. A 2-run double. Cubs lead. Cubs lead 7-6.
Kimbrel bends over at the waist. Now he comes set. And the 1-2 on the way.
Swing, strike 3 called. Check swing, strike 3 called. Ball game over. Cubs win the ball game.
That was Pat and Ron on the call last night. The Cubs were able to come back with a historic 6-run ninth inning. They get the win. They get the save. The win probability for them going into that was like 0. And they were able to win it. Yesterday, I had David Ross on the show. Rossi comes on the show every other Tuesday. We get a chance to hang out and talk baseball and all sorts of stuff. And I like him as a manager. I really do. I think that he's got an interesting approach to things. And his perspective as a former player, I think, is helpful. Specifically, his perspective as a catcher is helpful. And I had it on my list of things to ask him about what he expects going forward with this bunch, even though it's going to change. Like, the makeup of his team is probably going to change. He beat me to it by explaining what he expects going forward for the guys that are still on the roster.
That doesn't even come into my really frame of mind or the framework. I still stay true to my routine. I still stay true to the process. I don't think that anything that I've seen in the ways of winning is going to change. And as long as I'm here, other than just learning from moments and growing, but I've seen a lot of winning in my day, and I've seen this team win a lot of baseball games and play really good baseball, and what we were, how we were attacking those things and how we were what we were focused on. I think we continue to focus on those. I think we work through the problems. We work through the issues when they come up. We deal with the injuries. We deal with the performance, and we try to grow and try to get better and continue to focus on, like, we're trying to play championship baseball night in and night out. It doesn't matter who's on the field. It doesn't matter what guy's injured, what guy's here, what guy's not. I think you try to continue to hold yourself to that high standard. And when you don't do that, you try to work on it and figure out where your weaknesses are and how to be better. I mean, I think that's where we continue to do and keep that mindset and focus on, which we're ultimately trying to win a World Series every single year, every single step of the way, that, you know, we're either constantly growing or you know, we're not getting better. That's a problem. So I don't change my nightly process of going out there and trying to compete and win baseball games. And I don't think the players do either.
Nor should they. I think it's the right way to go about it. There is going to be change. There was a lot of interest last night in this particular moment where Chris Bryant makes a great catch, like a diving catch, showing you yet again he can kind of do everything. He makes a great catch. He had made a good throw earlier in the game. And then he leaves in the fifth inning. And everyone's like, Twitter just exploded. This is it. This is it. This is it. Get everybody ready. Get everyone ready. Meanwhile, there's a little tightness with the hamstring. They called it, I think, hamstring fatigue after the game. And this is why I bleeps with Rossi. Check out what he said after the game, understanding what happens when you take Chris Bryant at this point out of a game.
It made me laugh. I was actually giggling. I was like, this is nice for the media and all the people at home. They get to speculate till the ninth. And if I could have got a hold of Jason Carr, not to give you guys any information, I would have, and let you guys kind of run with some things. But no, I get all that. That's the first thing I thought of when he did come out and I finally had a chance to reset. I said, I bet the world, you know, all you guys, the Rosenthals, the Haymans, all those guys, I love that they had to waste some time and make some phone calls.
Yes. Jason Carr is the guy who's in charge of, like, disseminating the information to the media. That's who he's talking about. But, of course, like, that's the first place. We're in the era of hug watch now. So you're waiting to see. And when you saw him not, like, hug anyone, you're like, maybe I was thinking it was his shoulder. But it brings you to a really interesting thing that we have talked about on the show over the last couple of weeks. It would behoove Jed to make the trades for the guys that he's making. And I don't want him to take a bad deal. But if you are going to trade players, the risk that you run with them going out there and guys giving 100%, like Chris Bryant in last night's game, that the risk reward for the Cubs as an organization now, not great. So you've got some choices of what you could do. Like, you could say to Rossi, hey, man, you know that scheduled day off that you were thinking about giving Chris Bryant? Maybe it's 2 days off until we get some stuff done. But the worst thing that could happen for the Cubs, for them to try and start the next era of baseball, would be to not get anything for players because they were hurt at the deadline. Now, it's not something that you usually have to worry about that much, but there's a reason that guys get pulled out of games because the team that they're talking to doesn't want them playing any more innings for the team that they're on. If he's going to get hurt, then have him get hurt here, playing for us, trying to win baseball games for us. So it becomes a really delicate tap dance that Rossi and Jed have to do over the next week and a half, right? The 30th, they've got to do this where you have to field a team. You want players to showcase their skills, but in the cases of Bryant and Baez and Rizzo and Contreras and Hendricks, like, their resumes for the most part speak for them. But the worst thing would be we had a deal in place and then this guy got hurt. And then at the end of the year, you get nothing. You get the, wait, I shouldn't say nothing. Don't you get the compensatory they leave as free agents?
I'm not sure because the CBA expiring this year. I don't know if that still is grandfathered in, but the CBA is going to go away after the season's over.
Yeah, so you want to get what you can get. So hopefully, it seems like from what Rossi said after he made the joke, and here's my context clue that everything's all right with Chris. He wouldn't have joked about it if Chris were really hurt. I don't think I've ever really called him Chris. I usually say KB. So that's the good news of this, I think, if I'm reading the context clues correctly. But he also said that he was planning on giving KB a day off today. That was the plan. So we'll see. We'll see when the lineup comes out, who's in it, who's not. But that was fun. This is fun, good stuff from Rossi as per usual. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk more about what happened last night in Milwaukee, what it means for the Bulls and the broadcasting aspect of it next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
We spent some time at the top of the show kind of talking about what happened in Milwaukee last night. Congratulations to Giannis, to the Bucks. Winning an NBA championship is difficult, especially in this environment, and they were able to pull off something pretty great. In the enjoyment part of the championship with the trophies being presented, the person who was presiding over those moments was Malika Andrews. She's 26 years old, man. Young broadcasters, the ones I teach and the ones that if they ask for advice, I try to give them, they ask me a lot about what it is to make it. And everyone has their own kind of definition of what that means for them. But I will tell you that you should be looking to Malika as an example of if you are ready, you're ready. And she made sure that she was ready for that moment. It didn't matter what was going on with Rachel Nichols or Maria Taylor. The station came to her as a solution and said, we need someone who can do this. And she had been doing it throughout the entire year. I love it when you see someone's preparation pay off in broadcasting. And that job in particular is really difficult because you're not reading from a teleprompter. And you have to read the room and react to it. And I thought that she did such a wonderful job that it's something that anyone who wants to do what she does or what I do for a living should look at it and be like, she was ready because there wasn't anything that she wasn't prepared for. And that takes a lot of hard work and preparation. I said it earlier and I'll say it again. Malika Andrews is a star. I'm glad that I know her, and she did the damn thing last night. I'll talk with Parkins and Spiegel next here on The Score.